today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Today, it's Kenny Wayne Shepherd and singer Noah Hunt from the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band as they continue to tour across the world, supporting their latest record, Lay It On Down, from 2017. We talked to Kenny about being a guitar guy with a car problem, or vice versa. We talked to him about his other band, The Rides, featuring Barry Goldberg and Stephen Stills, as well as Five Finger Death Punch. They covered Blue on Black on their latest album.
We kept getting messages from our booking agent, who I think also represents them, and they were like, one of the guys from Five Finger Death Punch really wants to come out to one of the shows and meet you. And
we talk about the current tour, their record Trouble Is. That came out 21 years ago, but 20 years ago, it was still charting big time. As well as current rock bands and the current state of rock. Has anyone ever approached Kenny and tried to steal him away from his band to play with their band?
Well, he didn't try to steal me, but this last year, Joe Walsh approached me about taking me out on tour.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt from the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band are my guests today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you so much for checking out the Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast. Al Beck's coming up with rock news coming up here after we talk with Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt. He's got rock news on Queen, Chris Cornell, Kiss, as well as the guys from Ghost. Do they have new music done already in store for 2019? We'll talk about that coming up here in a bit. Just a quick reminder, if you like this podcast, give it a 5-star review, subscribe, check it out on iTunes, share with your buddies, the whole thing. We do appreciate that. And don't forget 248-586-2988 if you want to leave a voicemail, critique, criticism, question, whatever. Hey, coming up here, I'm going to ask Kenny about Five Finger Death Punch covering their song, Blue on Black. I did ask Zoltan about that back in May, and this is kind of a crappy connection, and Zoltan has that thick accent, but I asked him if he was a fan of Kenny Wayne Shepherd and his style of guitar playing.
No, not at all. In fact, I was kind of surprised on that song, because, you know, it's another song that I've really liked, and you know, that has kind of like a southern vibe to it.
So right.
I never imagined that that kind of vibe would ever work for Five Finger Death Punch, you know? So he wanted that song, you know, and it's actually that simple. If he really likes it, let's do it. And once we recorded it, I was like, wow, you know, I was really surprised that actually, you know, actually we could pull that into sort of the Five Finger Death Punch world, because as I said, that was a song that I was like, I don't know, guys, I don't know if it's gonna work, but okay, let's try it, because I just didn't see that happening, you know. And once it was done, it was a pleasantly surprised that, wow, it actually sounds, they made it by being that bunch, you know, it sounds like us. So that was actually a bizarre, for me at least, it was kind of a bizarre surprise. Wow, okay.
There's Zoltan from Five Finger Death Punch, as we thank Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt for stopping by the station in person. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, man. It's our pleasure, dude. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, in Detroit, I'm surprised, you know, do you guys have some place to go here? And of course, Kenny, I haven't figured out if you're a guitar guy with a car problem or a car guy with a guitar problem.
I haven't figured that out either. I don't know which one comes first sometimes.
Yes, various problems.
But like being in Detroit, is this like the holy grail of areas for you to come sometimes?
Yes, absolutely, man. There's something that I just love being here, and the whole state of Michigan, to be honest with you, but Detroit especially. It's like my favorite hotel in the whole world is in Detroit. Oh. and you know, just coming here and being around, you know, the hardworking people that for decades have, you know, broken their backs to make some of the coolest cars on the planet, you know, it just feels amazing to me. And then on top of that, the people in this state, they work hard and they play hard. And when it comes to their music, they're serious about it. And I mean, we consistently have some of the best crowds of any venues when we come to the state of Michigan. And I mean, you can read interviews I've done with people in Europe and Australia. They say, what's your favorite place to play? And I say, anywhere in Michigan, anywhere, because these people know how to have a good time.
Now, what's the hotel you like?
It's the Westin at the airport.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Because the thing is, man, when you do a show and you got to like fly home, you know, the next day, and you can stay at the Westin, it's connected to the Delta terminal right there, and you can go to sleep and you wake up and you walk like through security in the lobby of the hotel straight into the Delta terminal.
Oh, they have a TSA right there. Right. Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
So it cuts off, or like if you're flying in, mm-hmm. and you get to the airport, it's like you just go straight into the hotel and check in. You know, like when you travel like we do, that takes like an extra hour of travel time, of like, you know, getting the bags and like waiting for the hotel shuttle or the car service or whoever to pick you up and then drive you and drop you off and load and unload and all that stuff both ways, you know, so it eliminates that completely.
Yeah, I've never seen that in the hotels, but I have seen that like in hockey arenas when the players are leaving, sometimes they do the TSA thing and then they shuttle bus them right to the airport, right onto the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that before, but I've never heard of that before. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's great, man. It's like if I try and fly through Detroit as much as possible so that if a flight gets canceled or there's a delay and I get stuck somewhere, I'm at the Detroit airport. I just go check into the west.
There you go. So let's talk about your when you come here and visit, though. I mean, obviously, you know, you're a big Mopar guy and stuff. And when I came here in 1995, it was like, that's where they build the cars. I'm a big three guy. I'm a Mopar. Listen, you got Mopars. I get it. I have a Journey and a Caravan. Okay. I'm right on par with you.
I have a Caravan. Okay. I have a Pacifica. I got Noah's got a Challenger.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's a budding Mopar guy himself.
Yeah. I used to have a Dodge Ram too. I love that thing.
That's right. It was blue.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I love that car.
You've gotten bit by the Mopar bug too because of him, right?
Yeah.
He actually he had that Ram a long time ago.
Yeah, I love it.
It was like a nice B5 blue color.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I love it all. I mean, Mopar is my brand. That's what I know. That's what I love. That's what I grew up with in my family, you know. But I mean, if it looks good and goes fast, I mean, I dig it. Preferably, you know, I prefer American made.
Right.
But, you know, I'm a car guy. I'm all around car guy. But I prefer the Dodge, Chrysler, Plymouth, the Mopars, you know.
Yeah, I had a 68 Cornette when I was a kid, man. That was one of my favorites. My buddies had Challengers. And one of my friends had a Roadrunner. I mean, mint condition. And get this, not to go off on a car tangent, he sells it years ago for however much. That thing would be worth 30 or 40 grand. It was in perfect condition. The guy who buys it parks in his garage and someone runs into his garage.
Are you
like,
serious?
Seriously, the car was in the garage and this guy smashed into his garage.
Oh my God.
Yeah, talk about bad luck.
I hope he had it insured.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. So you were just doing something the other day, a couple days ago, where Dodge unveiled their 1,000 horsepower concept car.
Yeah, they built a 68 Charger to showcase the crate motor. The crate motor is called the Helephant.
So that's like, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, back in the day, in the 60s, they had the 426 Hemi, and they called it the Elephant motor because it had, you know, so much torque and power, and also because it was so big, right? So it's nicknamed the Elephant motor. And so this is the modern-day version of that. So they took, like, the Hellcat platform for their engine. It's the Gen 3 Hemi with the big blower on top. And they you know, forged the internals, they souped up the bottom end, they increased the displacement of the blower, and they're putting out 1,000 horsepower, 950 foot-pounds of torque, and a crate motor.
Man, if this guitar thing ever falls apart, you can just be a spokesperson for Mopar.
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like I am somewhat a spokesperson for Dodge, an unofficial one, but, you know, I do it because I love it.
Now, we've talked about this before, but, you know, the Wilbur Dream Cruise, one day you got to come up here. So we did the thing last year, as we've done the last, I think, however many times they've had it, the Dodge Roadkill Nights.
Right.
And that's so cool.
So last year, Tim Kaniskis, who was head of the passenger cars North America for Dodge, invited me out to that event. It was the second year that they were doing the Roadkill Nights. And so he was like, you got to come out and do this thing. And believe it or not, I've never been able to make it out to the Woodward Cruise because we're always working. That's like prime touring season. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping to make it. I couldn't make it, so I missed it again.
You're playing here today. This is only November. You can already make plans for August.
I know, man, but it's hard. You know, it's hard to pass up an actual. I have six children, so I got mouths to feed. Noah's got kids, you know, so it's like it's hard to pass up.
We need to work.
An opportunity to work and bring in some money to feed the mouths, you know?
Yeah. You couldn't do a gig right there at the thing. I mean,
we could, but that would require some effort on behalf of the people that actually book the tour and like some real focus. And it's like, hey, man, I mean, I've tried to, you know, how many years I've been asking them to book us in Hawaii and we still haven't. It took me 6 years just to get us back to Australia. So, you know,
you guys just played there, right?
Yeah. So it's like sometimes it's easier said than done.
Well, we could talk about cars like all day long, you know, here in Detroit Rock City, but let's talk about some music real fast. I was just listening to my interview I did today with Zoltan from Five Finger Death Punch. Yeah. You've probably talked about this, but what are your thoughts on their cover song of Blown
What,
By?
What do you think?
What do you think?
I think it's great. Yeah. Yeah. I really liked it. Yeah, I already liked that band, and I was really flattered.
Now, did you guys know they were going to do it, or was this a surprise? Or
I did not.
I did not either.
Yeah, they okay, so we were on tour with Van Halen back in 2015, and we kept getting messages from our booking agent, who I think also represents them, and they were like, one of the guys from Five Finger Death Punch really wants to come out to one of the shows and meet you, and for some reason, I don't think it ever actually ended up working out, so, but they were consistently trying to make contact, and so then I just found out, like, I found out, like, when I saw a news article, like an interview that they did, saying that it was on their record. So I went and listened to it. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, that song was a massive hit song. I mean, we set records for number one, longest, you know, reign at like number one consistently on the rock charts in the history of the Billboard charts at that time. Right?
I think that it actually this time 20 years ago was on that chart. Yeah.
Right. So it's 20 years later. It's time for it to happen again, but for these guys, you know, and this is a hit. I mean, it's a bona fide hit. So when you have a real bona fide hit song, it transcends like genre. You know, it doesn't have to just be a blues rock band like us doing it. These guys are a heavy, you know, almost metal band, and they're doing it. I mean, a country artist could also cover that song and have a hit with it as well. I mean, that's the sign of a great song. You know?
Yeah. No, which guitar player was it they wanted to run into? You know, was it Zoltan or was it
Jason?
No,
I think it was the lead singer.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah, Ivan. Yeah, because Zoltan told me that Ivan really likes that song, and that's why they started kind of screwing around with it in the studio.
Yeah. And I recently ran into one of those guys, and they're actually going to release it, I think, as a single. It's coming up. It's going to be one of their next singles. And I'm like, great, man, because I think you guys will have a hell of a run with it.
Yeah, and do you think does that get more sales for you and, I mean, catalog kind of stuff?
I don't know about that, but I wrote the song with Mark Selby and Tia Siller, so in that regard, you know, it could possibly translate into some income. Mm-hmm. I think some people, their fans, will hear the song, then they'll hear that it's a cover of one of our songs, and they'll be curious and go back and listen to the original. It might turn some new people onto our music for sure.
Yeah. Now, speaking of rock bands and just straight ahead like bluesy kind of rock, what do you think about the scene nowadays with some of these bands like a Dorothy or a Rival Sons or even guys from right up the street here, Greta Van Fleet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we love Rival Sons. We're good friends with those guys. And they should be bigger over here. They're really big in Europe.
Yeah.
I hope they get better. You know, it's been going on in Europe for several years. This kind of rock revival, and now it's kind of coming over here, back over here, and I'm really happy about it.
You know, what I wish is that the format across the country was there to support it, you know, because it's like most stations that, like, when we came up and we were having number one hit singles and selling millions and millions of records, there was, you know, there was mainstream rock, there was AOR, there was AAA, and all these these different formats that would play, you know, a band that has a rock a sound like that, or a blues-based rock band like ours. And a lot of those stations over the years have just disappeared. They've changed formats. They're either just all classic rock and play no current new material, or they've changed formats completely to, you know, whatever, pop or whatever the name, or triple. It's like, you know, Jack FM or one of those things. It's like, and there's not a lot of avenues for current rock bands to get their new music out so people can hear it. So I really hope that, like, there can be a resurgence in popularity and people can really get interested in that kind of music again. And then maybe, you know, some guys will take a chance in on their stations or on certain formats and help, like, convert the rest of the country back to playing, like, real rock and roll.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of stations like The Riff left.
Yeah.
You know, that's why this is a great station still.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, Rival Sons just did an acoustic thing for us. Actually, at the same venue that Greta Van Fleet did an acoustic thing for us last year, so maybe they'll prop them up like it did with Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah,
we were responsible, but you know.
No, man, I mean, look, this station was instrumental in our music and our career, especially exposing people around here to our music, and the Riff has supported us from day one, and you guys still do. So, I mean, there's a very significant history here with us in this radio station. Absolutely. And there's a few other ones like that. But like, for example, in Atlanta, when we would go to Atlanta, there was 96 Rock, and they were like the Riff to us back then. But then, you know, however many years ago, they just completely changed formats.
It's like Latino hip hop.
And so, like, now that doesn't exist for those people there.
Right.
So it's great that you guys are still around, and we certainly appreciate the support. Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks for that. So what's going on in the future with you guys? I mean, Laid on Down came out last year. You got The Ride. You're working on some stuff with those guys? Or
yeah, so my other band, The Rides, with Steven Stills and Barry Goldberg, we've done two albums together. We've done, like, three tours. It's a cool side project. It's a blues rock band, but it's a little different, obviously, because I'm writing songs with Steven Stills and his whole approach. And Barry is a great songwriter, too. But it's cool. It's like, it's a nice change of pace for me. Mm. You know, we're talking about maybe writing and recording another record. Steve is out on the road with Judy Collins right now, and we're out on the road with my band. And there's not a lot of, like, spare time for stuff, but we're talking about it. So, we'll see.
We have an album coming out, too.
Yeah, we were in the studio in March, and we already have a new album almost complete. Well, we recorded everything, so now I'm just putting the finishing touches on it with a producer, and it'll come out early next year.
Early next year, yeah. I was going to, you know, it's funny because I was just looking at a thing. You know, yesterday was the date in rock when, like, Mob Rules came out or something. Remember when they used to always put out that stuff like in the fourth quarter to get the Christmas buys?
Right, that's
stuff,
what
you know?
We did. All of our albums early on with Warner Brothers and Giant Records and all that stuff, it was always a fourth quarter release. Mm. And what was interesting is at the time we were the biggest selling artist on Giant Records. And so you would get all this pressure from the higher ups at the record label. They're like, we have to have a Kenny Wayne Shepherd release in the fourth quarter this year, or there may not be a Giant Records next year, you know? And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, we would pump out records early on, you know, a maximum of 2 years in between records, because they needed it, you know, to make that bottom line.
Well, tell me about this new stuff that you guys have worked on.
Well, we put out a new record last year in August called Lay It On Down, and we're still out supporting that one. So we're playing a lot of those songs in the show, along with some of our older material that people have grown up listening to for 20, 25 years now. So with the new record, I haven't chosen the final track listing, but I would say, and Noah can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this one is probably leaning a little more in a rock direction.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I thought that when we were making it. Yeah.
How come? Just are you influenced by some of the stuff that's going on right now, like we were just talking about? Or
I feel like we just make the music that we make.
It just comes how it comes out.
Yeah, I want every album to be different, stand on its own, and not like repeat ourselves constantly.
Just kind of happens.
Now, where'd you guys work on this record?
Los Angeles.
Okay, yeah.
Now, does that feel weird? Because it's like, I was watching the thing with Carrie Underwood a few weeks back on that CBS morning show or something, and she was going through her hometown, which, of course, she's a big fish in a really small town. And you were talking about, I think, one time working on stuff in your hometown, mm-hmm. and it has a different feel to it.
I loved it. We made two records. The Lay It On Down record is one of those. And before that, we did Going Home, which was a traditional blues album where we covered a bunch of songs by our biggest musical influences and heroes and stuff. But right after we did the Lay It On Down record, the studio closed its doors. Yeah. So there was never a great studio in Shreveport before that. And now they're probably, I don't know that there ever will be again. And there was, I looked every possible way at personally trying to salvage that studio and save it, but like the way that they structured their business deal and the location that it was at, it was you couldn't save it. So it's gone, and it's sad too because I loved working there.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, just talking about that, I've seen some of those cool documentaries like Dave Grohl did, and of course the Muscle Shoals documentary and stuff. Man, some of those are so cool. Hey, has anybody ever come up to you in your career and tried to like steal you away for their band?
No, nah.
Joe Walsh tried to steal you.
Well, he didn't try to steal me, but this last year, Joe Walsh approached me about taking me out on tour. His guitar player that he normally had in his band had to go out on the road with Stevie Nicks. And Joe and I have been friends since the mid-90s when I went and opened up for the Eagles on the Hell Freezes Over tour. And so we've done a lot of things over the years. And so he called me up and asked me if I wanted to go out and play guitar in his band. He was going to be opening up for Tom Petty over the summer. And I've tried
really... That was just last year?
Yeah, I think it was last year. And So it was either last year or the year before. I think it was last year. So yeah, man, I tried really hard to make it work. We had some conflicts. I had some gigs that were already booked with my band that I couldn't get out of, and we couldn't quite figure out a way to make it work. But I thought that would be really interesting, you know, to do that, because I'd kind of be a sideman in Joe Walsh's band.
Yeah, you'd be able to walk up to the front of the stage and show off a little bit, I'm sure.
Oh, he would give me plenty of opportunities to do my thing, for sure.
Played on one of our records going home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I texted Gary Hoetzay, and I'm like, hey, you know Kenny and stuff? He's like, oh, yeah, Kenny's a great guy.
Oh, we know Gary.
He said it's been a long time since he did anything with you. He said you were too young to bring over to the dark side. That's what he said.
Well, I don't know where he was.
All right, guys. Well, you guys have a great show here in Detroit. And I don't know, go head up the Mopar headquarters or wherever you're going to go today. And we do appreciate you guys stopping down.
Thanks for having us, man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
There you have it, Kenny Wayne Shepherd with Noah Hunt in tow as well. And I'll tell you what, that guy is a ridiculous car guy. I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, he's got a lot of cars, a lot of them newer, with souped up Challengers and Chargers. He's got one of these. He actually has a Dukes of Hazzard car as well.
They
redid it 12 or 15 years ago. Yeah. And he was telling me as he walked out that he actually redid that after seeing Kid Rock's Dukes of Hazzard car.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
And so his Dukes of Hazzard car, it still has the basic, model for the Dukes with the 01 and the Confederate flag and stuff, but it looks like it's all being tattered and coming off the car. It's really cool.
And that is really cool.
They replaced, the bolts and everything. I mean, that thing is mint. They did it for a TV show. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, I've got a rusty station wagon, and I can top off the washer fluid anytime you want, Meltdown.
There you go. Perfect.
So there you go. There's my expertise with cars.
So, yeah, I got to thank Kenny Wayne and Noah for stopping by the studio today. It's really cool. If you get a chance to see them out and about, definitely go check that out as they're touring the country. In the meantime, Al Beck joins me. He's got some rock news here for you for Monday, November, what is this, 6th?
Yeah, 5th? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I think it's the 5th. It
okay.
is the 5th.
Yeah.
But to start things off, since the last time we spoke, Meltdown, Vicky Cornell has filed a malpractice suit against Dr. Robert Coblin, who was Chris Cornell's physician, basically saying that Chris Cornell had addictive tendencies and that he wasn't watched enough with his medications that he had been prescribed.
Yeah, I just saw a documentary about this just last night, as a matter of fact, not about this particular story, but about Chris Cornell and his passing and stuff. But it was I think it was on Access TV or something like that. And they get this forensic guy to come in there. And, it seemed to me like he wasn't on a whole lot of stuff, or at least from the reports. And I'm no doctor. I can't read it. But it didn't seem that he was on a ton of stuff that day. It did show that him and his wife kind of had an argument on the phone, allegedly.
Yeah.
And then, they couldn't get in the hotel room and stuff like that. So we'll see where that lawsuit goes.
Yeah,
man.
Obviously
weird.
He's preparing a defense, the doctor is, and it kind of comes down to the question of where does the doctor's responsibility end and the patients take over, and I'm staying out of that part of it.
Well, they were showing in this reenactment and stuff that his security guy would, give him the medication. He controlled
okay.
And he would, if Chris wanted to help him sleep or whatever.
He did have addiction problems, so that's a smart.
Well, yeah, it said that he had problems because apparently when he was 12 years old, according to these reports, he was doing drugs and all sorts of stuff, right?
Sure.
He had kind of a weird family upbringing. And anyways, he had agoraphobia, which I think is a fear of,
that's open spaces.
Yeah,
it's the opposite of claustrophobia. You're afraid of going out in public and being around.
Yeah, exactly.
That's agoraphobia.
Yeah. So, anyways, he had that kind of going for him and stuff, allegedly. So, I could kind of see that because I only met Chris twice, and he seemed okay, but he was always a little bit kind of standoffish and kind of introverted, so to speak, and I interviewed him once on the phone and he was great, man. And it's that was quite a loss, but anyways,
Do you remember the name of that documentary by any chance?
I don't. It was like just an hour long thing. Okay. It wasn't like a, you know, okay. It wasn't released or nothing.
I was just curious. It's a lot of information there that.
Yeah. They do a lot on like Rockstar Deaths. I'm sure they did on like Kurt Cobain, different things like that.
Yeah, sure. So, well, not a documentary, but of course we had the Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody, which opened up and did pretty well. Now, it did have some reviews that weren't very kind going into it. Which, who can trust a reviewer, mm-hmm. you know, any critics, but it opened up in about 4,000, it looks like 4,000 theaters in the U.S. and Canada, pulled in about $50 million in ticket sales over the weekend.
Yeah, I saw a review from Billy Idol on his Twitter today, and he said some of the stories were a little bit, there was probably a little artistic license taken in some of the stories. He says it wasn't exactly true, but he says, I think that he said the guy who plays Freddie Mercury was spot on. So,
well, that's great. Like I said, about $50 million domestically, $72.5 million internationally taken in over the weekend.
I haven't seen the movie, and I was kind of thinking about going this past weekend, but I had too much stuff going on. But anyways, I was thinking about heading out there and checking it out, and it's like I saw the trailers for the movie like a few months ago, and I'm like, man, that looks awesome.
Yeah.
So
that'd
I'd
be
like
interesting
to see
check out. Yeah, well, I've got some now. Obviously Kiss is going out on their end of the road tour, whatever the hell they're calling it, end of the road tour. So we've been seeing a lot of Paul Stanley in the news talking about hyping this thing up, so I got a couple of Kiss bullet points for you. How about that? A little rapid fire Kiss update.
Yes.
Well, Paul Stanley is saying that, okay, let me back this up a little bit. One of the former members of Kiss had said, I would love to make an appearance. I don't know this guy's name. You have to help me. Bruce Kulick. Bruce Kulick had said that he would love, if he had the opportunity to jump on stage with these guys during their final tour, he would love the opportunity. And Paul Stanley did kind of put it out there. He didn't really say that any former member is invited, but they're... It would be nice to see, and you may see some former members.
Yeah, I don't know where they stand as far as you know, Bruce's relationship with those guys. I'm not exactly sure why he left the band, or you know, whatever the case is. But yeah, we'll see. Listen, Ace is always going to be hey, look at me over here. I want to be in there. You know.
Yeah.
And Peter Criss, I don't know. Peter Criss kind of goes off and does his own thing. I'm not sure if we'll see Peter Criss, but he's not really like Steven Adler with the GNR thing, where you know Steven really wants to be part of that, you know, reunion. But
yeah, well, the. He did say that this tour is supposed to be a celebration of all things Kiss throughout all of their history. So it seems like at least Paul Stanley is open to that. Bullet point number two in Kiss. Paul Stanley shoots down this rumor that's been going around for a few years that Eddie Van Halen was almost a member of Kiss.
Yeah, that seems ridiculous. But
yeah, I guess there was some Gene Simmons interview back in 2014 that made it sound like, yeah, things weren't going super well. He was, Eddie was fed up with DLR and wanted to be in Kiss. And Paul says that's not exactly how that went. Yes, there were some turbulent times, obviously, in Van Halen, and Eddie came to the studio a couple times, but he was never going to be a member of Kiss.
All right, well, first of all, okay, there's many things wrong with this story. So, you know, Gene is the one who, you know, self-described discovered Van Halen.
Yes.
Right? You know about that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so back in like 1977 or something like that. Anyways, first of all, Eddie Van Halen doesn't need the money.
No.
Okay? He doesn't need the money. Second of all, there is not going to be face painting on Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
And that would like, yeah. And what kind of Kiss show would it be like if one guy didn't have face paint?
It would be cool though if he put like the Van Halen like logo, like his guitar all
that
over his face.
That would never happen. The red and whites, that'd be
kind of
funny.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see. It would be cool to see. And our final Kiss bullet point real quick, obviously getting ready for this big tour. They have a lot of pyro, big stage performance, and the way they get all that in order, they actually rented out the Los Angeles Forum Arena just to test out their pyro.
Yeah, not exactly a new theory. You know, the guys from Trans-Siberian Orchestra, if I'm not mistaken, are right now, this week, they rent this theater in the middle of Omaha or somewhere like that, this big, you know, hockey arena or whatever.
Yeah.
And well, at least as big as one in Omaha can be. It might be like 5,000, I don't know.
Right, yeah.
But anyways, what happens is, did you ever hear what they do?
Mm.
So TSO has an East Coast and a West Coast band. And so what'll be happening?
That I knew, yeah.
Yeah, so what happens is the East Coast band will be playing on their stage, and they'll be doing the pyro and all the show, all the other stuff, on the other stage on the other side of the arena. So they'll have two stages set up. And then vice versa, and they can and see what the stages look like, and that's how they like, you know, prepare for their tour.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's super cool, man.
That is really cool.
We'll be talking with, as a matter of fact, I got the drummer, Jeff Plate, coming up here on the Talking Rock podcast, coming up here in, I don't know, before the snow flies.
Well, finally, Meltdown, nothing is actually confirmed, but there have been hints dropped by Tobias Forge of Ghost, maybe releasing some new material next year, and it sounds like a lot of it may have already been recorded.
Well, my big thing with Ghost, with their last record, Prekel, is that that record was really killer. There was 9 tracks on it, but if you take away the intro and two instrumental songs, right, there's only 6 tracks on it.
Sure.
Even though they were all pretty decent, but it's like I kind of was hoping for more of Tobias, you know what, yeah, I'm saying? Because we don't even know who's in the band.
Right.
Didn't they dress up as Kiss in their Halloween show? Like, Tobias had his thing on, you know, it's Papa Emeritus. Yeah. And then I think some of the Nameless Ghouls actually put Kiss paint on.
I hadn't seen that. No.
Yeah, I think I saw something like that on Instagram or whatever. So.
Yeah, I missed it, and I'm the rock news guy.
That's right, the rock news guy. Yeah, I'm self-proclaimed.
Yeah,
so,
right, there you go.
Hey, speaking of the gram, give your Instagram handle and your Twitter and stuff out.
All of them, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Al Beck Radio.
There you go. I'm at Meltdown WRIF, and you can find this podcast on Talking Rock with Meltdown on Twitter and whatnot. It's just talking, no G. So make sure you look that up and you know, follow us and share this if you like. And I got to thank once again Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt for coming in here today and hanging out with us. And man, I'll tell you what, I think I might have to head to that show tonight and check it out for myself.
Sounds good.
All right, there you go. Talking Rock, thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, by all means, give it a 5-star review and share it with your buddies. And thanks so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.